Chapter 6 Butterflies. Maddie was concerned.
Oh no! You let him have his way with you, didn't you, Victoria?
She had seen that look on many a girl before. Victoria smiled at her friend, still basking in her ecstasy.
It was absolutely divine, Maddie.
Victoria crossed her arms, put her hands on her shoulders, and then began twirling around in circles.
I have never felt more like a woman.
Maddie gravely shook her head.
Did you forget all that I told you, Victoria?
Please, Maddie, I know you are concerned, and I know I need to be realistic. However, just for right now, I am the heroine in a beautiful love story, and I am not just reading about it. I actually lived it, and it was divine. For the last few nights, Minna Everleigh had seen the interaction with Robert and Victoria and decided it would be a good idea to have a talk with her. At the afternoon meal, Minna asked Victoria to meet her in the library when she was finished eating. Victoria happily agreed. It seemed like nothing could ruin this amazing feeling she had. It was like none she had ever known. Minna had seen this before. She liked Victoria, and she was concerned. When Victoria walked into the room, Minna was waiting for her. Hello, Miss Minna.
Shut the door, Victoria. You look happy.
I am. I am beyond happy. I just spent the three best nights of my life with a handsome, charming Texas gentleman, and I feel like a brand new woman. Minna smiled.
I know we tell you to forget why you are here, and you did an excellent job at doing just that. Perhaps too good of a job in this case, Victoria. Mr. McKnight is a good-looking, charismatic man. I know the two of you had a wonderful time together. I just want to know what your expectations are. Not all of our clients are like your Texas gentleman. In fact, he is one of the most handsome men I have ever seen. Did you happen to notice the other clients the girls were entertaining?
Not really. Of course I noticed them, but I have to admit, I was not paying attention to anyone else other than Robert.
Exactly. You did your job well, Victoria. The way you took care of Robert McKnight is exactly what we do here. Our objective is to make our clientele feel like kings, men who should be worshipped and adored. I am sure Mr. McKnight is feeling like the highest of royalty, especially after spending three glorious nights with you. You will learn soon enough not all clients will be like your Texas gentleman. Remember, they pick you. You do not pick them. We are here simply to provide a service, not to find Prince Charming to carry us away to his castle. Although, it is not impossible. It is not our reality. Do you understand what I'm telling you, Victoria?
Yes, I do, Minna. I know I am not as experienced as the other ladies, but I am very aware of what it is we do here.
Men with money like to have nice things, Victoria. They wear fine clothes, ride in fancy carriages, eat at elegant restaurants, and belong to exclusive clubs, many which they can join only with a formal invitation. These men are willing to pay generously to be with a beautiful woman, whom they find interesting to talk to, and who will laugh at all their jokes, feed their egos with charm and grace, and creatively satisfy their fantasies behind closed doors. They are not here shopping for wives. In fact, many of them already have one. They are here to experience the essence of a lovely, elegant woman with no strings attached. I just want to remind you that your Mr. McKnight came here specifically for that purpose. For you, it was like one of the Chicago clubs hitting a grand slam at the bottom of the ninth inning on their first time up to bat. For him, it might be just a pleasant experience with a beautiful lady in Chicago.
Yes, I know, Minna. I like to think of it as a fairy tale. This one is called The Lady and the Texas Gentleman. It is a wonderful story, even if it ends today and I never see or hear from him again. It is still a beautiful story.
This can be a heartbreaking business, Victoria. Protect yourself. Remember, the men pay us well to be their fantasy dreams come true. They may even make promises and tell you wonderful things in the heat of the moment that can completely change at the break of dawn. We are exceptionally good at what we do here. Even though you are not experienced with men, you are intelligent and creative. You know, there are several satisfying ways to please a man, Victoria.
Yes, I know, Minna. Madeline has been teaching me some of her tricks.
May I suggest you develop a method that is unique and exciting? You can apply different techniques to not only obtain your objective, but also to stay in control of the fantasy game. Any woman can lay down on a bed. Those women are likely to pick up a disease, become pregnant, or both. That is not what we do here. We want our girls to use creative methods to sexually satisfy the clientele. You are a beautiful woman, Victoria, and I am sure someone will want you tonight. It is your job. Remember, they pick you. You do not pick them. Are you up for it?
Yes, Minna. I know. Victoria's happiness was slowly diminishing, and her memory of Robert McKnight was beginning to fade away. Thank you, Minna.
You will be fine, Victoria.
Minna stood up, gave Victoria a little hug, and opened the library door. Victoria walked out and looked around the Everlay Club. The sisters were masters at creating elegant ambience. Every room was exquisite and impeccably decorated. Victoria loved living in opulence and luxury. The staff waited on the girls as if they were ladies of the Queen's court. After a parlor was used for entertaining, the maids were quick to go in with a fresh, clean set of sheets to put on the bed, along with a sweeper and a duster to clean the room as if it had never been used. They would also clean and shine the $650 solid gold spittoons that were in every room. Victoria decided to go to her room and read one of her favorite books, The Arabian Nights. The story is about a Persian king who learns that his wife has betrayed him. The king becomes extremely bitter and angry and has it in his mind that women cannot be trusted. Every night he marries a new virgin and has her beheaded the next day. 1,000 women have all perished until finally he meets one of his high official's daughters, Scheherazade. Scheherazade loves to read, and she especially likes poetry and has collected over 1,000 stories of histories, kings, and departed rulers. She is beautiful, polite, wise, witty, charming, and extremely well-bred. Against her father's wishes, Scheherazade volunteers to marry the king. She and her sister devise a clever plan. That evening, she asks the king, "Please, may I bid farewell to my sister Dinazade?" Dinazade then asks Scheherazade to tell her a story. The king lays awake through the long night and listens in awe as Scheherazade masterfully tells her sister the first story.
Finally, at the break of dawn, the story reaches a climax, and Scheherazade stops talking. "What happened?" the king asks anxiously.
"Dear master, it is dawn and time to stop. I will finish the story tonight."
Scheherazade's life is spared. That evening she finishes the story and begins another one. Again, Scheherazade's life is spared, and so it continues for 1,001 nights. Because of her stories, the king has become a wiser and much kinder man. He marries Scheherazade and has 3 sons by her.
"Scheherazade," Victoria thought to herself. "I will be like Scheherazade."
That evening, Victoria chose a coral-colored gown to wear. She looked especially radiant, probably because Robert had awakened her long-dormant womanhood the night before. Again, she took her place by the piano, allowing the music to take her to another world. Unlike the other girls soliciting their charms, Victoria's eyes were closed, and she smiled with contentment as her head swayed to the rhythm of the music, all this actually making her even more intriguing. Suddenly, she was awakened from her contentment to Minna's voice.
"Victoria, this is Christopher Baker. Mr. Baker, may I present to you our beautiful Victoria Pearl?"
Victoria opened her eyes and gracefully stood up. "Very pleased to meet you, Mr. Christopher Baker." She reached out her hand, and Christopher Baker ceremoniously took it and kissed it without taking his eyes off her. He was obviously pleased with his new companion.
"The pleasure is mine indeed, Miss Victoria."
She could tell by his haircut and outdoor complexion he was an athletic type.
"Do you play golf?"
"As a matter of fact, I do."
"I have always wanted to learn. Such a fascinating game. Minna, the music is wonderful this evening."
Victoria lightly put her fingers on her throat.
"I believe I am a little thirsty."
"Miss Victoria Pearl, I would be deeply honored if you will allow me to buy you a drink. In fact, I would appreciate your company this evening. Will you be so kind as to join me for dinner?"
"Thank you. That would be lovely."
Minna smiled with satisfaction. Victoria was going to be just fine. Victoria and Christopher spent the next 2 hours chatting and dining. Although he was nothing like Robert McKnight, he was nice enough, and Victoria performed her job well. She laughed when he laughed, and she used her eyes to capture his attention. When he told her she was beautiful, Victoria smiled coyly. She was witty, charming, and interesting. And of course, her manners were impeccable. Victoria had made a special request to use the Egyptian room for the evening. After dinner, she led Christopher up the mahogany stairway. The most profound quality of the Everleigh Club was the silence in the hallway that connected all of the parlors. The air was laden with the scent of flowers and sweet perfume as Victoria escorted the eager Christopher to their den of fantasy. The Egyptian room had thick carpet to muffle any sound and was decorated with gold and white linens. As a special touch, there was the masterfully crafted effigy of Cleopatra herself. Victoria had planned a fantasy game, and she would perform it skillfully this evening. Her tone was seductive as she gently closed the door.
"Won't you sit down, Christopher? We are going to have an evening together you shall never forget."
Obediently, Christopher Baker sat on the fully stuffed golden sofa. He was like a schoolboy waking up on Christmas morning, anxious to open his presents. Christopher Baker was completely mesmerized with Victoria's seduction and responded to everything she said with genuine excitement.
"Do you know the story of Cleopatra and Mark Antony, Christopher?"
Victoria kept her promise and gave Christopher Baker a memorable evening he would take with him throughout his lifetime. She had found her niche. She was Scheherazade, and Christopher Baker would certainly be back for more. They would all come back for more. Victoria created stories to go with all of the different rooms, that is, all but the Rose Room. Everyone knew not to give that room to Victoria. Her time with Robert was sacred as far as she was concerned, and sharing the room with anyone else would only destroy the fantasy. Victoria enjoyed her new life immensely. Although a part of her understood it was a short-lived lifestyle, she found wealthy men to be charming and especially interesting. For the most part, she also learned they were extremely polite and respectful. Most of the wealthy men had impeccable manners and knew how to appreciate a beautiful, intelligent woman. Victoria had great respect for the self-made man. These were men who seemed to have the most stamina and character. She met high political officials, wealthy bankers and businessmen, celebrities, and then, of course, there were those Texas cattle barons. It was May 4th, 1900, Victoria's 22nd birthday. Minna walked into her room holding an envelope.
Looks like you have some mail from Texas, Victoria.
Robert had indeed kept his promise. She always felt in her heart she would get a letter one day. The first night they were together, he had told her that Texas gentlemen were true to their words. Her heart was beating so hard, she felt it might jump right out of her chest. Thank you, Minna. Minna remained standing at the doorway. She didn't want Victoria to be alone if it was some kind of disappointing news. He's coming to Chicago, Minna. He'll be here next week. Victoria was elated.
We will make sure the Rose Room is reserved for you, Victoria. Just remember what I said. Protect yourself. Let him be your fantasy Texas cowboy for now.
Robert's letter said to expect him Thursday evening. Victoria was on pins and needles all day long. She hadn't been able to sleep well for the last few days, anticipating his arrival. Finally, Thursday evening, Robert walked in with a group of Texas cattlemen. Minna welcomed him with open arms and chimed her standard greeting.
How is my boy?
She then took his arm and led him straight to the piano where Victoria was anxiously waiting for him.
Mr. McKnight, you remember our Victoria Pearl?
Robert elegantly bowed and kissed Victoria's hand. He looked even more handsome than she remembered.
Lovely to see you again, Mr. McKnight.
Would you give me the honor to dine with me this evening, Miss Victoria?
I would be delighted, kind sir.
For the next 3 nights, Robert and Victoria celebrated their sacred time in the Rose Room. They performed the love dance eye to eye, heart to heart, and soul to soul. Robert was smitten, and Victoria knew he had her heart. The morning Robert left Chicago, Victoria decided not to be sad. She realized that in any moment for the rest of her life, she could bask in the memory of their precious time together. No one could ever take away the vision she played over and over in her mind every day. Now Victoria completely understood the memorable words of Alfred Lord Tennyson. It is better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. Victoria decided to write about Robert in her journal. This seemed to satisfy her desire to remember even the tiniest details of their sacred moments of making love. Reading her journal erased any sense of time and kept the experience fresh and new. Throughout the next few months, Victoria became more experienced and began making important friends. Men admired the fact that she was an avid reader and stayed current with the latest trends in politics. Because Victoria was a good listener,
She learned about business and how men think. Although sex seemed to be the attraction of the Everleigh Club, Victoria learned that it was not necessarily always the ultimate goal. The wealthy gentlemen who came were buying companionship with a classy, intelligent, beautiful woman who made them feel important and admired. It was an elegant place where a rich man could enjoy himself with other men of the same social status. After all, if it were just sex they wanted, Chicago had plenty of other places for that. Victoria thought about Robert often, and she wondered if he ever thought about her. She wrote about Robert in her journal as if they had an ongoing, exciting love affair. Sometimes she would write fantasies about taking trips with him to Europe or exciting cities like New York, San Francisco, and New Orleans. By now, Victoria had made friends with most of the girls, but she was especially fond of Mosella. She had learned that Mosella had worked as a lady of the evening in what was now referred to as Storyville, a red light district in the city of New Orleans. Mosella's grandmother had been a concubine to a sugar plantation owner in Louisiana. His name was John Bradford and was Mosella's grandfather. Mosella's mother grew up on the plantation and moved to New Orleans after the Civil War. When Mosella was 17 years old, her mother died, and she and her brother Duke went to work for Madame Louise on Basin Street in the Red Light District. Duke played the piano at the brothel where Mosella worked. Mosella told Victoria about her life in New Orleans. She also shared stories about living on the plantation with her grandmother.
Mammy was a character. Told me the only real free women were black women with their white lovers, on account of white women having to go along with what their husbands want, whether they likes it or not.
When she was 26 years old, Mosella moved to Omaha, Nebraska with a white man who left her after a few months of living there. Omaha is where she met Ada and Minna Everleigh and was hired to take care of the housekeeping staff at the bordello they ran during the Trans-Mississippi Exposition. When the sisters moved to Chicago, they asked Mosella to join them. Victoria trusted Mosella and confided in her about her feelings for Robert. "Of all the men I have come to know, this one has my heart, Mosella." Within the first year at the Everleigh Club, Victoria had two marriage proposals, both from wealthy men capable of giving her a life of luxury. Victoria politely declined. "I am your pleasure girl. Making me your wife might change your fantasies about me." The truth was, she would rather be independent than spend the rest of her life with a man she did not love. Working as an Everleigh butterfly had been quite an adventure for Victoria. She had come to love the lifestyle and socializing with important men and pillars of society. Victoria made the effort to stay busy and continued her love of reading. On Sundays, when the sisters allowed visitation from the girls' special beaux, Victoria found her joy in reading a good book. She only wanted Robert in that way. Although she attempted to keep her heart in a safe place, his memory sometimes came crashing through like a tidal wave on a beach of shifting sand. The Christmas holiday season at the Everleigh Club was an extravaganza. Ada and Minna spared no expense in decorating the club. It was a festive time for all. One of their favorite clients, Uncle Ned, as the Everleigh Butterflies affectionately called him, was especially fond of Christmas. All through December, he enjoyed sitting in a chair in the middle of the room with his feet planted in a bucket of ice. He then insisted the ladies circle around him and sing jingle bells. Uncle Ned joyfully played a tambourine and drank sarsaparilla, while the girls danced around him and sang the familiar Christmas carol. Regular clients showered the girls with gifts, and Ada and Minna received bonus checks from the gentlemen who appreciated their efforts in maintaining such a regal and exquisite establishment in the heart of the levee. One man in particular
gave the sisters each $5,000. The next year, the same man married a woman he met at the Everleigh Club after being with her just one night. Her name was Susie Poontang. A week before Christmas, Minna Everleigh came to Victoria's room with a package from Texas. She smiled as she handed it to Victoria. The name on the return postage read Robert McKnight. Inside the brown parcel was a small box wrapped with golden paper and white ribbon with a card that read,
"To my beautiful Pearl, Merry Christmas to the woman who has my heart. Love, Robert McKnight."
Mosella had come to stand next to Minna, and the two women watched as Victoria opened her gift. "Oh my!" Victoria held up a 3-carat diamond necklace. Also in the box were 2 iridescent lavender pink concho pearl earrings.
"Oh, Victoria, they are absolutely exquisite."
"Looks like your cowboy's been thinking about you too, Miss Victoria."
The next few years, Robert came to see Victoria several times. Each time he brought her exquisite gifts of glittering diamonds, emeralds because she was born in May, and lovely jewelry made with pink concho pearls. He never talked about his personal life, and Victoria never asked. It was always an unsaid rule at the Everleigh Club. Minna often said,
"What the men do outside these walls is none of our business."
The gentlemen in Chicago knew it was an honor and privilege to be allowed into the exclusive Everleigh Club. Money was only one requirement. Minna and Ada did not tolerate rudeness, obesity, or anyone with an unpleasant stench that might take away from the lovely perfumed scent in the parlors. There were those who came just to drink and dine, and saw the beautiful butterflies as a side attraction. In just a short time, the Everleigh Club's reputation had spread all over the world. In March 1902, Prince Henry of Prussia visited the famous club on a trip to America to pick up a ship built for his brother, German Kaiser Wilhelm II. Although Chicago had planned many fine events in his honor, the king's only real interest was to have the Everleigh experience. Ada and Minna planned an extravagant party for the prince. As one of the butterflies performed a can-can, her shoe flew off, causing a bottle of champagne to spill into it. One of the prince's men gallantly picked up the shoe.
"A beautiful woman should not get her dainty foot wet."
He drank the bubbly champagne from her shoe with a chivalrous flair, thus initiating a new tradition at the Everleigh Club. Although the Everleigh sisters appeared to be lovely, delicate ladies, gushing with southern charm, they were also brilliant businesswomen who understood the concept of superior marketing tactics. Several times a week, Minna and Ada called for their fancy carriage to carry them to the bank to deposit large sums of money. Led by 2 magnificent dappled gray horses, the sisters always brought a beautiful butterfly to accompany them. Like the Venetian courtesans who floated on gondolas throughout the canals of Venice, the richly clothed coachmen paraded the ladies through the great open spaces of Chicago. They did not need a band to attract attention. With great success, the dramatic scene flamboyantly advertised the quality of woman available at the now famous Everleigh Club. People went out of their way for the privilege of catching a glimpse of the elegant Everleigh sisters as they rode by with a beautiful butterfly in their fancy carriage. "There they go. Aren't they grand?" said the onlookers. "I am saving up for the day I can call on them." The men who frequented 2131 Dearborn Street completely trusted the Everleigh sisters because their integrity was absolutely impeccable. Their privacy was always secured. One evening, one of their wealthy clients spent $1,400 on a lavish party with champagne, women, and gourmet food. The next day, he sent an agent to pay his bill. When the man came to the door, because the sisters did not know him, they politely informed the agent that the gentleman who sent the money had never set foot in their establishment before and turned the money away. Several days later, the patron happily paid the bill himself. Needless to say, he was incredibly impressed. It was not easy keeping trouble away from the Everleigh Club. The sisters continually donated thousands of dollars to the First Ward Alderman, Bathhouse John Coughlin, and Michael Hinkydink Kenna, to ensure their freedom of enterprise. Ada and Minna allowed press and legislators in for free. They were all familiar with the popular phone number, Calumet 412. This came in handy one year when evidence showed that one of the girls had shot Marshall Field Jr. The Chicago Tribune reported he had died from an accidental shooting in his home. Victoria was always amazed at the variety of women who came to work at the Everleigh Club. One day, a gorgeous, voluptuous woman named Phyllis showed up.
"I hope you like me. The man to whom I was engaged died suddenly of heart failure. I just had to get away from unpleasant surroundings. I have no parents, and here I am. It is a strange adventure for me, but I am sure I can learn. From what I overheard on the train, a life of shame in this adorable house must be the most glorious existence imaginable. May I stay?"
Understanding the stimulating excitement of mysterious anticipation, Phyllis liked to blindfold her clients before leading them up the mahogany stairs into one of the boudoirs she had personally prepared herself. When unmasked, the patron would feast his eyes on an impeccably decorated room with deep, rich colors designed to visually take him into sensual fantasy. The parlors had subtle lighting on curtains made of royal blue, dark red, purples, or green cast, inviting amorous hues. Several vases filled with fresh-cut flowers filled the room with beauty and a natural, pleasant fragrance. Within a week, men were fighting over Phyllis. Another girl named Valerie had a rich, beautiful voice and sang like a bird. Because she loved to attach herself to anything white, she called herself Little Miss Purity. The Everleigh sisters made arrangements for Valerie to join a vaudeville act, and the main performer instantly fell in love and married her. They made it big and became highly successful in the theater world. Alas, her husband fell for another woman who had joined the theater group, and when they divorced, she came back to the Everleigh Club.
"I don't understand. I did everything you taught me. I was clean and attentive. Then she came along. What did I do wrong?"
Again, the sisters made connections for Valerie, and she went back to the theater. This time she became more famous and an even bigger star than before. Then there was Myrtle, a naturally born actress, but a girl too lazy to follow that kind of career. She came from a farming town in Illinois, and although Minna and Ada clearly disapproved of it, Myrtle loved to chew tobacco. One night, when a party had become dull, Myrtle summoned Edmund, a black servant adorned in red and gold braid.
"The tray, Edmund."
The servant appeared, and when he returned, he was carrying a shiny sterling silver tray on which was placed a huge plug of chewing tobacco. As previously rehearsed, Edmund presented the tray, and Myrtle eloquently accepted the tobacco with style and flair, and then bit off a big chaw. When she returned the plug to the tray, Edmund dramatically bowed, and everyone in the room laughed hysterically. From then on, Myrtle regularly honored requests to repeat the performance. The seriousness and eloquent display made it funny. Ada didn't feel it was ladylike at all.
We do not approve of anyone spitting on our Oriental rugs.
Although the sisters thought it crass, they went along with it to please the customers. Eventually, Myrtle married a nice, overweight young man in the oil business who built her a beautiful home and made her switch to cigars. They had two children and lived happily ever after. From the first evening they were together, Robert McKnight possessed Victoria's heart and soul and was constantly in her thoughts. Robert had been her fantasy cowboy. Victoria read everything she could get her hands on about Texas. She read about the Alamo, the Battle of San Jacinto, and the Texas War for Independence. She knew the stories of men like Davy Crockett, Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston, and Jim Bowie. Robert's family had been among the early settlers who had acquired land grants in the spring-fed land near the San Saba River, and on his visits to Chicago, he told her about the cattle business. Chicago played a huge role in selling and trading Texas cattle, and Victoria made a point to learn all she could about pricing and making deals. 3.5 years had passed since the afternoon Victoria had first walked into 2131 Dearborn Street. Before that day, she had been a librarian from a small town outside the Chicago city limits. All she had ever known about the world was what she had read about in her books. Now Victoria had entertained and dined with politicians, wealthy businessmen, and dignitaries. At 26 years old, she was becoming more aware that her time at the Everleigh Club was only temporary. She had enjoyed being surrounded by elegance and luxury, but it was only where she lived. None of it belonged to her. Victoria had great insights to the way men think and knew intimate secrets about powerful men the rest of the world would never know. Learning from Ada and Minna had served her well. She became knowledgeable about politics and basic human nature and had acquired a strong, sound business sense. Through the years, men had bought her expensive jewelry and had given her money. Some took delight in buying elegant gowns for her to wear, just for them. Victoria liked the feeling of both making money and saving money. One of her regular clients was an investor in the stock market. She had done well with her personal investments, listening to his knowledge and strategies over dinner and wine. It was the spring of 1904. The World's Fair, known as the Louisiana Purchase Exposition, was being held in St. Louis, Missouri. A new invention called the automobile was introduced. The fair had a 340-foot Ferris wheel called the Observation Wheel that inspired a new song. Meet me in St. Louis, Louis. Robert McKnight did just that. He invited Victoria to meet him in St. Louis to attend the World's Fair. Robert was waiting for her at the train station when Victoria arrived. They spent 5 days together in St. Louis, where they ate a new popular food called the hamburger, drank iced tea, and enjoyed a new dessert invented at the fair called the ice cream cone. It was different making love away from the Everleigh Club, and Victoria felt she had truly gone to heaven. Finally, on their last evening, they rode the St. Louis Ferris wheel, which had been built with parts from the same Ferris wheel Victoria had ridden with her parents 11 years before. when the wheel had circled around and reached the top under a crescent moon, Robert McKnight, the handsome gentleman from Texas, asked Victoria Pearl to marry him.
Miss Victoria Pearl, would you consider making me the happiest man on earth and do me the honor of becoming my wife?
Victoria Pearl McDougal's dream had finally come true. Yes, Robert, yes! As he placed the sparkling diamond on her finger, Victoria truly felt she could reach up and touch the stars.